You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Jennifer Page became an overnight success with her self-titled debut album, catapulting her into the spotlight after Crush went to number one in seven countries around the world. Seven, folks, count them. One minute she was living a relatively private life in Los Angeles, and the next she was either singing for the Pope at the Vatican or in front of both a live television audience of millions, or sitting with Prince Albert of Monaco, sipping tea maybe after being nominated as Best New Artist at the World Music Awards. An MTV and pop radio favorite, Jennifer Page worked tirelessly supporting her records while continuing to define herself musically on her latest release, the long-awaited Best Kept Secret, a website you might want to go to today, folks, jenniferpage.com. That's P-A-I-G-E, jenniferpage.com. And she joins us on the Drew Marshall Show today. Hi, Jennifer.
Drew Marshall, how are you?
What's going on?
What's up?
What are you in the middle of? Where are you? Are you in Nashville or are you somewhere else?
I'm in Nashville.
Are you really in Nashville or are you like Hendersonville or something?
No, I'm in Franklin.
Okay, yeah. You see, that's different. That's
it
different.
It is,
yeah.
Right. Usually I'm in Nashville, but today I'm in Franklin.
Thank you. Just want to clarify. These are important details people want to know. The other thing that people want to know is, so I guess you didn't think you'd make it big with the last name Scoggins?
You know, it just didn't have the same kind of ring to it, so we just figured we'd drop that one. No, since I was a little girl, I just pretty much, like, scribbled my Jennifer Page and, you know, and so it stuck.
So that was a name you kind of had thunk of when you were a wee kid?
You know, it's my middle name,
so it was
easier than that.
Nice. I've got a friend of mine who's trying to get into broadcasting in some sort of fashion, and her name is Mari Lee, and her last name is Malcew, M-A-L-I-C-E-W, I think is how you spell it. And I've told her to just stay with Mari Lee. What do you think?
There you go. I think you're on to something.
Yeah. Hey, do you still have that huge Akita, or is it just you and your Basset Hound, Miss Chili Dog?
Yeah, it's just Chili Dog, and the Akita is still in L.A. At that time, I was roommates with this NBA, you know, star, basically, and he was always on the road, and so I kind of inherited his Akita, but now he's off the road, and so I had to give her back.
All right. What did you sing for the Pope?
I sang a very legitimate song, which just was a lot more serious and more, it was for during Christmas time, so it was just a beautiful, beautiful, like, Italian song, so it was really different than the pop music that I normally sing.
Now, when you were younger, I know you were jealous of the attention your brother was getting, but was it because of his singing or his clogging? I mean, what's with the clogging? Seriously, your brother clogged?
Hey, we're from Georgia, and at the time, it was, like, pretty happening around town for a six-year-old to check into clogging, and you know, he was a natural, so, you know, he had to do what he needed to do.
Does Chance live near you now, these days?
I'm actually at his house.
How cool is it being Auntie Jen, though? His daughter is, what, almost 2 years old now?
She's one.
Okay.
But they just found out that they're going to have another baby.
Oh!
And, you know, that's pretty fast action, so, so I'm really excited. Their baby, Jalen, is just, she's so cute, and she's such a cute. I mean, it's just been so much fun.
Nice. You grew up being shaped by gospel and blues and Olivia Newton-John. One of these things is not like the other.
Exactly, but I liked the Olivia Newton-John when she was doing, like, Physical and all that stuff, and I just thought she was so cool, and she was definitely my first influence. But then just being raised in Georgia and all the great talent, local talent, my family was, they were huge into music. My parents weren't singers or anything, but they had such a huge wide variety of music that I just was very much shaped by that. My aunt was a country singer in town, and so she also was always singing around. So it's so hard for me now to even know who really influenced me, because I listened from everything from the Moody Blues to the Clark Sisters to the Pointer Sisters to, I mean, just really every kind of music you can imagine.
Do you remember the first time, Jennifer, you went into a church when you were young and had that black gospel choir just grab your soul and take you right back?
I do. I was pretty young. I was maybe like 9 years old or somewhere around in there. And just, I mean, I think it was kind of like an experiment. I think my dad took me because he knew how much music meant to me. And it wasn't like we went to these kind of churches, but, I mean, we just went to this super, like, all black, you know, soulful. And it was like I might as well have been in a movie, because I'd never seen anything like it. But it was incredible, and everybody was just screaming, and I was raised Baptist, so like for me this was just mind blowing. So it was really cool. And the music, I mean, the people, just every person in the pew next to you was just wailing, even if they had no voice, just the most horrible voice ever, they were like loud and proud.
Why didn't you end up going country like your aunt?
She did a lot of local fairs and things like that, and I saw, like, her working hard, you know, and she was, like, surrounded by, like, you know, pigs and all kinds of circus clowns, and I just thought that life wasn't really for me, you know?
Yeah, I think that might be a good call. So let's see if I get the order of things right here. After you finished Pebblebrook High School, you went on the road with a top 40 band, then came the Vegas Lounge, and then comes my favorite part of your story, one of my first crushes that I ever had. She convinced you to move to L.A. where you did jingles and song demos and hustled your way into the business. I'm talking about Crystal Bernard. Is that a true story?
Yeah,
true
it's
story?
It's true. That's so funny. I love that.
When I was living in California as a young guy, to this day, that's the only celebrity I've ever written fan mail to was Crystal Bernard.
No way. Yep. That is hilarious. Yep. I love that. She is such a cool chick. I mean, she was so supportive of me. And, you know, to be honest, I was performing in Vegas with this band, and she saw me sing, and she came up and said, you know, you're good. I write songs. I would love for you to sing on them next time you come to LA, you know, come, you know, please let me know. So I'm like, oh yeah, no problem. Well, of course, like after she left, I totally went up to my room and I was jumping on the bed with excitement. I was so excited because I thought she was so cool, and I totally recognized her from TV. And she came, and when I did go to LA, I had never been before, but of course I was trying to act like a big shot, like I'd been there so many times for work and stuff. And I totally took my savings and stayed in a hotel. And then she, after the first day of singing on her song demos, she said, oh, just come stay with me. And, you know, you can, there's no need for you to spend money. And so we just became fast friends. And she really watched out for me. She gave me the kind of, it wasn't like she really did anything that I can say tangibly, like, oh, she paid for my rent. Or she didn't do anything like that, but she gave me the confidence that I was good enough that I could make it if I wanted to move there, and that at least knew one person when I moved there.
Are you still in touch with Crystal Bernard by any chance?
Yeah, I am. Not as much. Not as much. I'm sorry to tell you, not quite as much.
Man.
They'll still take my calls. Okay. There's still hope.
Oh, I feel like a 2-year-old here.
That's so cute. I love it. She's great, though. She is.
Yeah, let's just clear up for our listeners. We're talking about, she was Joni's friend in Happy Days? I think, was it Friend?
She was on Wings.
Yeah, but that's later.
Wings.
Sorry.
Yep, exactly. Happy Days, exactly.
Right.
And then Wings and It's a Living. Remember that show?
Oh, yeah.
Where she was the waitress. That's the show that I knew about growing up, you know, it's a living. And I just, you know, she's from Dallas. She's a cool girl.
Yeah. All right, let's not talk about Crystal Bernard anymore. I'm sweaty palms here and everything.
You're flustered.
I am. Okay, so you met Andy Goldmark, who, of course, worked with Elton John, All for One, Natalie Cole, Patti LaBelle, Mike Bolton, Brian White, ended up partnering with you on your first album, which, of course, included Crush. Do you think Crush sort of typecast you, so to speak, Jen? In other words, have you found that along the way you've had to keep redefining yourself or proving to people that you're more than Crush?
Absolutely. I mean, I definitely think so. It's such a blessing, that song, but at the same time, it was, you know, such a rough go to, in the very beginning, literally just out of the gates, to have this enormous success with the song. I mean, I'd never say it was a bad thing, but it definitely does typecast you, especially at that time, too, because at that time when the song came out, it was kind of right at the cusp of when all the pop stuff was starting to come out. So we had just come through that, like, more rock kind of style stuff. So, you know, it just really stood out on the radio, and everybody just wanted again and again, like, repeat that. So I found myself, you know, trying to please people for a long time, just writing another song like that and another song, you know.
Yeah.
So I finally outgrown that pressure, but it took me a really long time.
I heard that your 2001 release called Positively Pampered kind of got lost amidst the whole 9/11 mood. I mean, that must have been a real kick in the guts for you, because I can imagine that, you know, your second album would probably be filled with a whole lot of blood, sweat, and tears, with you wanting to prove to the world that you're not just a one-hit wonder, and then it gets released and during this time of mourning, and it's not like you can blame 9/11 or cry about the whole thing publicly, because you just look like an insensitive jerk here. So that must have been just brutal to have to go through all that.
It was a pain. It was a major pain, because, I mean, I'd worked on the first record. I basically recorded it in a basement, and so it was totally, you know, just bottom, you know, level, just basically just throw it together and creativity at its best, though. And then the next record was, you know, the best producers in the world and a big budget and a major label and all that, and then it just had horrible timing. So it just goes to show you, no matter how much you plan and try and make things work, it's just, it is what it is, and however it's meant to be will be how it is.
Jennifer Page has been called a rootsy blues rocker, a dance floor diva, a seductive soul singer who oozes smoldering sensuality. You okay with those descriptors?
Hey, I'm feeling pretty good about myself. That's great.
Well, there's a lot of labels put out there. August 2002, though, you get into the feature film stuff here. Disney's The Country Bears. Christopher Walken. That must have been cool working with Christopher Walken.
So cool. I'm such a fan of his. He's so cool. And it was, you know, just awesome. And there was a lot of really cool music people, too, in that film. So it was just kind of a fluke that I got hired for that. And it was so much fun, because I never really pursued the acting thing. So for me, it was just, I did go to a performing arts high school, so it wasn't like I was completely, I'd had a little bit of skill, but it was just, it was really a kind of an awesome experience.
Well, fellow musicians, Elton John, Willie Nelson, Bonnie Raitt, Don Henley, they all kind of worked on this as well?
Exactly.
Wow.
It was a kid's movie, but it was kind of like, it had the humor for adults too. So it was just written really well, and it was really great music. John Hiatt was a big part of the music of that movie, and that's actually my role. I played the part of a waitress. It was a small role, but it was kind of like a takeoff of the Aretha Franklin thing in
right.
The Blues Brothers.
Right.
It was really, really fun.
You know who does the best Christopher Walken imitation? John Schneider did that for me a couple times. He's been on the show a couple times, and he does the best. I mean, we're talking the father of Superman here. We're talking Dukes of Hazzard, right? John Schneider does the best Christopher Walken, but he says that Jim Caviezel does such a good Christopher Walken that he sounds more like Christopher Walken than Christopher Walken.
You're kidding. That's funny.
Yeah. Jesus doing Christopher Walken. I just thought that was kind of interesting.
That's cute.
So your music is featured in both movies and on hit television series, including Simply Irresistible, starring Sarah Michelle Gellar, and Autumn in New York, starring Richard Gere and Winona Ryder, and Warner Brothers' Dawson Creek and ABC's General Hospital. You've been all over the place.
The cool thing is that even though I've kind of been out of the limelight over these last years, my music has still definitely been out there. It's just it hasn't been as in front of everybody as you know, in the past. So that's a great thing about just writing music. And now I kind of do that just to keep current and to keep, you know, you never know what's going to come next. So I think the best thing that I can do is always be making new music and seeing what I can come up with. And then basically it lands on these different shows, and that keeps the momentum and it keeps me feeling good about everything.
Well, one thing that impresses me a lot about you, Jennifer, is your eclectic musical taste. I mean, we're talking everyone from Dolly Parton to Billie Holiday to Counting Crows to Sarah McLachlan to Sheryl Crow to Alanis Morissette to these guys. I'm not sure if you recognize this band or not, but I hear that they're one of your favorites. All right? Have a listen. Tell me which band this is. Have a listen.
Is that Tool?
Have a
is
listen.
It Tool?
Nope.
Beastie Boys. I'm so jealous because I heard they were in Nashville the other day.
Oh, really?
I didn't get to see them. Oh, my gosh. I heard that they played some underground concert, and I was so bummed that I didn't get to see that.
Jen, you have no idea. I, for the last 6 years, looked for an excuse to play Beastie Boys on my show.
That's awesome. I knew I liked you. I knew I did.
Oh, yeah. Well, Best Kept Secret was released, and I think it's fair to say that you have a massive European following, more there than over here in the United States. Is that fair or not fair?
That's definitely fair, yeah. Definitely.
Was it released on a German indie label? Is that right?
It was, yeah, exactly. And my first record was also released through a German label, you know, it kind of came through Hollywood Records as well, which is a U.S. label. So I just had a lot more visibility here in the U.S. for that first record. But, you know, the Europeans, they really have such a wide variety of music that gets noticed, and they're so loyal. And, I mean, I think Americans are too, but there's just so much in our faces that it's really hard to kind of know where to focus. And if you're not, playing all day long every day on a radio station, it's just easy to get distracted by other things.
Yeah, Jenna, I was talking to someone the other day about the fact that you're such a huge hit over there, and I was thinking about the fact that Europeans tend to have a bit of a suspicious palate when it comes to music. It's like, okay, we'll see if we like you. We don't lap it up right away. But then once they do, man, they'll bleed for you over there.
It's so true. It's such a scary thing as an artist to perform there for the first time, because I've had shows there, even in Germany, where they'll literally just stare at you through the whole first song or first few songs if they don't know you very well. And they'll just stare, and you can tell they're summing you up and like, do I like you? I'm not sure. Okay. And then by the end of the show, they're just going crazy. And then you know, okay, if you've won them over, you've won them over for life. It's such a cool process.
Well, I was going to say maybe they're selective, but then again, David Hasselhoff is big over there. So
I asked about that when I was there, and I said, okay, what's the deal here, you know? and they said, okay, well, he's funny to us.
Right.
And I said, what do you mean? Like, so it isn't that they literally think, apparently, it's not that they think he's the best musician ever. It's that they think he's great because he's so funny to them. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it.
Okay.
I get it, so.
I'm sorry, David.
Yeah.
What's going on with Nick Carter?
So, yeah, we might be doing a duet together for Europe. And, you know, he's from Backstreet Boys, and he's, I was introduced to him just through some friends, and he's really talented. So we wrote a song a couple weeks ago in L.A., and now we're just figuring out kind of how we're going to move forward with it. And we still have to record it, but I think we're going to be doing that within the next few weeks or so.
Cool. Have there been any opportunities at all kind of pop up yet to perform with Justin Timberlake or John Mayer?
You know, no, but I love them both, and, you know, all fingers crossed, you know, one day that will come around.
Well, maybe if you were just a better driver, you would be able to have people wouldn't be scared of you like this, because, I mean, when you put that dent in that Beamer when you were shooting Underestimated, I think the world got a little scarier.
God, you're good. How'd you know about that one? That's funny. Yeah, you know, in videos, they always want me to drive cars. Like, in all of my videos, it seems like I'm always in some kind of convertible or something. And in this case, I'm just not a good driver. I don't know why they keep wanting to put me behind the wheel. It just doesn't make any sense to me. So, yeah, we rented this BMW for the shoot, and it totally got, it got completely crashed.
So if Justin Timberlake or John Mayer are listening, you are actually an okay driver. Is that what we're trying to get out there? Is that the word?
Sure. Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah. So the other thing that might keep guys like that away from you would be the fact that you're a bit of a klepto.
Yeah, I've had a few incidences recently.
I cannot believe that you found a brand new pair of size 3 jeans on the street, tags on them and everything, and you picked them up and put them in your purse. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Wow. Okay. So all my skeletons are coming out now. Yeah. You know, like, it just baffled me so much why a pair of brand new jeans with tags are in the middle of the street, and they were the cutest jeans ever. And yeah, I took them. I did. I'm sorry. Please forgive me, God.
All right. Let's move along to a different topic.
Okay.
I am Southern to the core. That girl who seems perfectly demure on the surface but is burning underneath. That's a quote I wanted to introduce this next section. Let's talk about your love life, shall we?
Let's go.
You ready?
I think so.
Do you still think that Matt Damon is a kitty pup?
You know, he's kind of lost the appeal a little bit.
You're so cold.
I speak the truth. I do love him, though. He's pretty hot. He's hot.
Okay. Was the song Sober about anyone in particular?
No, it wasn't. It was just, you know, I think it was just sometimes you just end up writing songs and you don't really know where they're coming from. And that one was just one of those, I think it was a combination.
Okay. Were songs like Not This Time, The Edge, Tell Me When, You Get Through, and Stay the Night, were they autobiographical?
No, not always. Not always. That's a tricky one. That's a tricky one, Drew.
People want to know. Inquiring minds.
Well, some of my songs are really scandalous. Like, you know, I don't know why I'm drawn to, like, even Crush, or there's a new song called Best Kept Secret, and I'm always drawn to these, like, very flirtatious songs that are just, I mean, my brother says I'm kind of like a hooker. He's like, oh, my gosh, like, what are you saying right now? Like, what are you trying to tell people? Like, Stay the Night is totally about a one-night stand, and I'm so not like that, but I don't know why I'm drawn to these songs that are, like, very seductive.
Jennifer, was it love that made you jump out of a plane, or was that just a friend?
That was just a friend. It was just a friend. And I had moved to California. I was feeling very like, I did it, you know. And my friend, who was this expert parachute jumper, you know, he says, oh, you got to do it. You got to do it. And so I did it. And I can't believe that I did it. And I didn't tell anybody I was doing it. And then right after I jumped out of the plane, I called my parents and I said, I just jumped out of a plane. It was so cool. It was the most exciting thing ever. And my mom was like, I'm going to kill you. Like, you are dead. You're so dead. Yeah.
So, Jennifer, are you in love? Is there a man in your plan?
You know, absolutely. I'm seeing somebody that I'm really into right now. So, you know, I'm old enough now to know, like, to hold, you know, just to kind of let time tell. And I've had enough relationships that I just kind of want to let time tell and see how it goes. But you know, I'm definitely looking for Mr. Right.
You're still looking for Mr. Right?
I'm definitely looking for Mr. Right.
All right. Yeah. Well, here's the ad I think that you should put into Lava Life, okay? This is Jennifer's perfect day. You ready?
Tell me.
Starts off in the morning with a cup of killer Java, then head out for a rollerblade or a bike ride, then maybe hop in your purple convertible and take a long drive, eventually end up at the beach, and then later in the day invite a bunch of good friends over for dinner, maybe cook up some ridiculous Italian meal with some of that imported cheese you've been saving for a very special occasion. And then after everyone's gone, break out that special piece of chocolate you were saving just for yourself.
Wow, you are good.
And that's
good. You're so good. I gotta get that. You gotta email that to me so I can put it on match.com or something. That sounds good.
That's Jennifer Page.
That's very true, though. Those are all my favorite things. Absolutely.
Jennifer, you had probably the toughest year of your life last year.
I did. I definitely did. Yep.
Can you open up a little bit about this? I mean, I don't want to go where you don't want to go, but you and I chatted briefly last week about the fact that you lost both your mom and your dad last year.
I did, and it was just such a, you know, ground-shaking, kind of crazy. I mean, my mom had been sick, and she had been it had been coming on for a few years with a lung problem, and then, you know, she was hospitalized, and of course, even if you're kind of told to kind of look out for things like that, then I don't think you're ever really prepared or ready when something like this happens. But she passed away in December, actually in January. She was put in the hospital in December and passed away in January. And then a week later, my father had a heart attack, and he passed away the following week. And, you know, my parents were just such an awesome couple and such, you know, beautiful people, supportive, just incredible, really. And they I never knew them to not be together, and I think that's why for me, like, you know, love wise I think I've got such a high expectation, because they were truly best friends and they were such cool people, and it rocked my world, definitely. And just kind of figuring out how to live without their influence and without their advice and without just being able to run over for dinner or, you know, just the little things that you forget how much, you know, that person is part of your life, and especially when it's kind of two people and two huge, you know, roles like that. So it's been a huge, you know, learning experience, and I'm still trying to kind of figure out, you know, how to move forward and keep going and keep learning and not just get, you know, down and try and see the positive in it as well.
In a lot of your earlier interviews, Jennifer, people would say things like, you know, in order to be really creative, a lot of times people need to be in a kind of depressing funk. And they would sort of ask you about where your creative juices kind of come from. Do they come from that kind of down stuff in life? And you're like, no, I mean, I my life's real good. I come from a good family. Everything's real good.
Right.
You know, and now you've had this happen to you. And, I mean, you're answering that question differently probably now. So I'm wondering if that creative side of you has been released in a different way since the passing of your parents.
Definitely, I think so, because, you know, before, you know, I'm definitely a glasses half empty type person. I mean, full, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm definitely, like, I'm always trying to see the positive in a situation, and I've always been like that, and so this definitely came out in my songs, I think. Even if it was kind of like a down song, there would always be a point in the song where it wasn't like, okay, and now the song is over and you're completely depressed, you know. I would always try and turn it some little way, like, but there's hope, you know. And now I just find myself going like, hey, if this is the feeling, just let that feeling be the feeling. And it doesn't necessarily have to be like, but everything's going to be okay. It's just like taking that moment and letting that be the moment, you know. So I found myself writing more songs that just are kind of honest about that feeling. And just letting it hang out there. So I guess it's made me a lot more vulnerable.
Okay, so with your parents both passing in the same year, I mean, I ask this question a lot of different guests. When garbage happens in their life, when life throws them curveballs, a lot of times we look at God and go, seriously, come on. Like, what the heck are you doing?
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about your faith background. I mean, you said you kind of grew up in a Baptist scene. Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine that you kind of came out from underneath whatever your parents' belief systems were and got to a point where you had to sort that stuff out for your own. Is that
Definitely,
true?
Definitely, yeah. I think that when I moved from Georgia, you know, as a 17-year-old or 18-year-old to California, that was definitely a time of discovery for me and just realizing, like, oh, everybody's not Baptist. I didn't know that. Like, you know, I really didn't realize that. I didn't know that there were, like, Jewish people even living in the United States. I was just so naive. And so, you know, there was just, like, it was such a learning time for me. And I think this process of figuring out kind of what I believe has definitely made me stronger. And I think even, like, with my parents and just being older and having different experiences and stuff, it definitely has made me, you know, question God and God's place in my life and different things. And I guess, like, there's been enough cool signs. I'm like a person, I love signs. I love something that I can be like, oh, well, this happens and that, blah, 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 and that equals that. But, you know, with God, I think there's not a lot of that going on. You know, it's a lot more just like for me anyway, it feels more like a gut feeling or a somehow like, you know, inner truth. Or, I mean, I'm not overly vocal about my faith and stuff, but I just feel like it's kind of there. And it's just it's definitely made me who I am. So I've had enough worldwide experiences, I think. I've traveled, like, all across the globe. And I think that definitely opened up my mind to, like, oh, everybody's living in different ways and believing different things. And I kind of just have chosen now at this point to kind of believe what I believe and let other people believe what they believe and, you know, try and talk it out. And I find it so interesting, I guess, that I don't really judge that in other people. And I hope that I'll continue to grow. And, you know, every big experience that I've had, I think, has helped me in that.
With your parents passing, though, Jen, I mean, does that make you want to press into their belief system, or does that give you freedom to discard their belief system? Like, what impact does their passing directly have on where your faith is at?
It's definitely made me wonder in a deeper way, like, about life and death and kind of where a person goes after death, because I never had anybody that close to me die before. And so that's been the biggest thing for me is, like, before, you know, if I heard someone had passed away, I'll be like, oh, wow, you know, and it would hit me. But this, it's like, oh, somebody passed away, and now where are they?
Right.
You know, where did they go? And something my dad said that when my mom passed away that really affected me was he said, I just wish I knew, you know, we were having a conversation. He said, I wish I knew if she was looking down on us right now and she could see us and she's in this room with us, her spirit or however it works. And, you know, or is it that I won't get to see her and she won't get to see us until we pass away too and then we'll reunite then? I just wish that I knew that, you know. And so I said, yeah, Dad, me too. I wish that I knew that. And I guess we won't know until, and I said, but let me tell you a cool story. My friend Judy, you know, she had lost her boyfriend when she was like, I guess, in college, and they were touted to be married and the great couple and everything. And he had died suddenly in a car wreck. And apparently he came to her in a dream and said, you know, I'm going to leave pennies, and that's God, you know, saying, I'm with you, and, you know, you're not alone, and I'm thinking of you. And anyway, that was her dream. Well, if I didn't live with her, she was my roommate for 5 years, and this girl found more pennies than anybody I've ever seen in my life.
Really?
It was ridiculous amounts of pennies. I mean, she'd always be like, penny, like it was obnoxious. You know, I'm like, geez, like, holy crap, like, dial phone, like, right to the angels, you know? And it just seemed like really over the top to me, but I still didn't, like, you know, it wasn't my personal experience. So I told my dad that, and I said, so that's kind of cool. Like, she definitely feels like she is in direct communication with him whenever she finds a penny. So my dad was like, well, that's a cool thought. You know, I hope that's true. And so anyway, after my dad passed away, and this is something that's definitely given me some kind of strange hope and connection to them in a way, is when my dad passed away, I just cannot tell you how many pennies I find. It is like, just like her, ridiculous amounts of pennies. I mean, I move and I've got a penny on the back of my moving truck. I get in the car that my cousin's completely cleaned and they know the penny story. And she's like, if you find a penny in there, I'm going to die or whatever. Well, there's a penny in the cup. I mean, I have, you know, so many stories that would just blow your mind. It's just so, like, little things like that have definitely helped me get through and definitely feel like, okay, there's some kind of heaven up there and there's some kind of angel up there that's watching over me through this.
Boy, I bet that old teddy bear you travel with certainly has a lot of meaning to you these days.
Yeah, you know, you got to find it where you can, right? Maybe now the pennies have replaced the teddy bear, but I think you've always got to have a little something like that.
Just for our listeners, this teddy bear, I think, was given to you by your daddy when you were a wee girl?
Yep, exactly, exactly. And even as, you know, I was touring around the world, I've got this silly little teddy bear with me, you know. It's like one little piece of home with me as I'm in China or Japan or wherever it was. It was like one little piece of home.
Do you also have a special necklace that your folks gave you?
You know, I can't remember who gave it to me now, but okay. I did have this necklace for the longest time,
right.
That I just would have, whenever I would go on stage, it would be like a little good luck charm. And I don't even know where it started, but somehow I started it, and then one day I lost the good luck charm, and I thought, oh, my goodness. So, you know, hopefully there wasn't a lot of truth to that one.
Do you ever flash back to those times where you were upstairs listening to Mariah singing at the top of your lungs, and your dad was screaming upstairs, shut up!
Yeah. You know, I was so bad. I mean, I would just scream, and she sang so high, and I was just, my goal in life was to be able to sing that high. And now I think I've realized, like, she just sings higher than me, so I'm just going to have to deal with that, you know. But at the time, I hadn't realized that, so my poor, you know, family had to put up with the brunt of that one.
Do you have any of those old tape recordings your dad used to make of you and your brother?
I do. I've got some seriously embarrassing material.
Oh, you so, hang on to those. You hang on to those.
It's so great. I mean, it's so bad, it's good.
Well, I got to say, I mean, I have to offer my condolences. It's kind of cool to hear you process this and journey through it. And but a loss is a loss. And this kind of a loss is astounding, Jen. Seriously, both your parents in the same year. I mean, what was the time span between your mom's passing and your dad's?
Yeah, it was a week later. My father had a heart attack, and then he died the following week. And so it
right.
became like 2 weeks difference. But I have a cool story if you've got a second.
Sure do.
I this is something that's definitely given me a lot of faith too, and it's definitely put a lot of question marks in my head about life and death is my mom and dad were huge Moody Blues fans. They went to several concerts all around the globe, you know, to see the Moody Blues. And they have this one song called 22,000 Days. And this song is all about, you know, an average man's life is 22,000 days. It's not a lot, but make it, you know, make it all you've got because it's here and gone, basically. So my mom gives my dad this this necklace, this charm that says 22,000 days, and as long as I can remember, he wore that charm. And, you know, everybody would ask him, what does that mean? You know, so many times I remember him telling the story. So after he passed away, my sister-in-law did the calculation. She was curious, you know, and so she did the calculation. And crazy enough, he was alive 22,008 days. With 8 days in the hospital.
Wow.
Is that mind-blowing?
Yeah.
She did, like, leap years and everything. She just really wanted it. She was just curious, you know. She wanted it to be, you know, accurate. And so that pretty much blew our mind. So it you know, definitely throws the question out there, you know, was it predetermined? Like, how does it work, you know? How did that work?
Man, that is trippy. Seriously.
Isn't it? Yeah, I know. It's mind-blowing. So those little things are the things that make me go, well, you know, I mean, it's all bigger than me, and how am I supposed to know? And obviously I've got my meltdowns, but
yeah.
For the most part, I mean, there's been enough little kind of signals like that that just make me go, well, I guess I'm not going to understand it until I'm, you know, dead and gone.
Yeah, good for you. You know, Jen, I've over the last few years have figured out that doubt is more compatible to faith than certainty is. I think that if you're running around feeling like you're all that in a bag of chips as far as your faith is concerned, and you got it all certainly kind of figured out, I think you're missing something. I really think that doubt is a key component in the world of faith. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, I'm just thinking about you going through what you've gone through and looking at God going, whoa. I mean, you know, you came from, I might be putting words in your mouth here, well, I am, but you came from sheltered Baptistville, right?
Yeah, yep.
To traveling the world, spending a lot of time in Europe, where the minds are definitely a lot more open than they are over, you know, here in North America.
Absolutely, yeah.
To real personal tragedy, and what do you do with this Jesus you were taught about in the midst of all
right.
this, right?
Yep, definitely. It's oddly enough, it hasn't made me go like, Jesus, I'm so mad at you, or, you know, it hasn't made me turn in any way. It definitely just put a lot more questions, and I wish that I knew the answers. It bugs me that I have to wait to know so many answers. But, you know, it hasn't made me turn, which I'm thankful for.
Good for you. Have you heard of a book called The Shack?
No, you know, a friend recommended that, but I don't know anything about it.
Okay, I'm going to send that to you, all right?
Oh, I love it. Okay, perfect.
I want a Grammy. I want a house by the sea. I want a loving family and kids one day. I want to do something meaningful with my life. I'd like to make a positive difference while I'm here on Earth. I think you're well on your way, Jennifer.
Oh, thank you. That all does still sound really, really good to me.
Yeah, well, that came out of you from years ago, so I can't wait to see you at the Grammy Awards.
Oh, come on, bring it.
Well, the gal we've been chatting with is Jennifer Page. She's got a lot of cheek and a lot of resolve as well. I like your style. I like your stuff. We've been shooting emails a bit back and forth and introducing each other to some tunes, although I think you've been introducing me to tunes. You already knew the ones I sent you, so.
I love it. Well, keep them coming.
All right, Jen, we're going to go out with one of your songs here, but thanks for joining us. Jennifer Page is the website, and you can get all of her music anywhere and everywhere. Again, thanks for your style, who you are. I really appreciate it, Jen.
Thank you. I love talking to you.
All right, take care.
See ya.
Jennifer Page on The Drew Marshall Show. Have a listen. This beautiful voice.
There's a light. Turn on the light. Keep it locked inside. And shelter the heart. Cover the scar. Hide away, hide away. I don't want to be found. Hide away. No one can see that I'm all. Over the end, 'cause I'm always
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
Passing the time, losing my mind. Wait for it, wait for it. I don't know what I am waiting for anymore. 'Cause I'm all